Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Where were you? Were you? When? What was going on? What was your life like, your world, when this went across television screens all across the nation?
This is Walter Cronkite in our newsroom, and there has been an attempt, as perhaps you know now, on the life of President Kennedy. He was wounded in an automobile driving from Dallas Airport into downtown Dallas, along with Governor Connally of Texas. They've been taken to Parkland Hospital there, where their condition is as yet unknown. We have not been told their condition. At Dallas, in the downtown hotel room, a group had been gathered to hear President Kennedy when he was waiting his arrival. Let's switch down there now, where Eddie Barker of KRLD is on the air.
As you can imagine, there are many stories that are coming in now as to the actual condition of the president. One is that he is dead. This cannot be confirmed. Another is that Governor Connally is in the operating room. This we have not confirmed. The president was whisked from the scene of the attempted assassination, or assassination depending upon his condition, of course, at this hour, by bus to Parkland Hospital, and the president undoubtedly is in the emergency room at that hospital, which would be on the first floor of Parkland. No word is yet. We are awaiting something more official. It is, of course, difficult, certainly, to go on scanty reports.
This is Walter Cronkite back at the CBS newsroom in New York. We have just been advised from Dallas that blood transfusions are being given to President Kennedy. Let us recall for you now what has transpired in this.
KRLD is reporting they've been told by somebody at the hospital the president is dead. Only a rumor, but they've been told that KRLD is dead.
Well, that's a repeat of something that you heard reported to you directly a moment ago from KRLD television in Dallas, and that is the rumor that has reached them at the hotel that the president is dead. Totally unconfirmed, apparently, as yet. However, let's go back to KRLD in Dallas.
Operating room, we do not know what his condition is, but the report is that the president is dead. This is not confirmed. This is something that word just came to us a minute ago. The word we have is that President Kennedy is dead. This we do not know for a fact. The word we have is that he is dead, that he was shot by an assassin at the intersection of Elm and Houston Streets just as he was going into the underpass. The word we have is from a doctor on the staff of Parkland Hospital, who says that it is true. He was in tears when he told me just a moment ago. This is still not officially confirmed, but as I say, the source would normally be a good one.
That was Eddie Barker at our affiliate KRLD in Dallas, Texas, speaking from the room where President Kennedy had been scheduled to make an address to three Dallas organizations. But an assassin's bullets cut him down on the way to that meeting from the airport. It was just an hour ago that the incident took place. We have just learned, however, that Father Huber, one of the two priests called into the room, has administered the last sacrament of the church to President Kennedy. Regarding the probable assassin, the sheriff's officers have taken a young man into custody at the scene, a man 25 years old, we are We just have a report from our correspondent, Dan, rather in Dallas, that he has confirmed that President Kennedy is dead. There is still no official confirmation of this, however. It's a report from our correspondent, Dan Rather, in Dallas, Texas. We're now going into that Dallas luncheon the president had planned to address. Let's go back. Prayers, we understand, are underway.
That we may reveal that calm that shall be pleasing to thee.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has not been seen in the corridors of the Parkland Hospital. He was said to perhaps have been slightly wounded in the arm. Mrs. Lyndon Johnson says that the Vice President, though, is fine. Throughout the streets of Dallas, the Dallas police had been augmented by some 400 policemen called in on their day off because there were some fears and concerns in Dallas that there might be demonstrations, at least, that could embarrass the president. Because it was only on October the 24th that our ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson, was assaulted in Dallas, leaving a dinner meeting there. From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
I don't think to this day we fully know everything. We don't have a complete compendious list of all that died on November the 22nd, 1963. I was short of 10 months old, so I can't offer any profundities. There are many of you who are older than I who can, who know where you were, who know what the sun looked like in the sky, who know every minute detail of what your world was when that hellish news came out. Interesting Walter Cronkite's reference to the assault on Adlai Stevenson in Dallas. It was a hotbed then, and it is a hotbed now. And the coals have been fanned and blow out across this nation. A little something for this day being this day, I didn't feel like starting with the usual Moran Monday shtick. We've certainly got some Morans for you. But we are reminded of how dangerous they can be. Of how dangerous ignorance and fear and hatred can be. It is 47 years since the murder of John Kennedy, since a nation's hopes and dreams were dashed. Well, a nation except for the likes of Ronald Reagan and Nancy, who were partying that night, I believe at John Wayne's house. He was a notorious right-wing pig, too. But it never stops, does it? And there seem to be certain people who can excite the weird, sick bigotries and prejudices of the right wing almost like none other. John Kennedy was such a person. John Kennedy, 47 years ago, 50 years ago, stoked unintentionally the fears of the knuckle walking, mouth breathing right wing because of his religion. Now, if you've listened to this program, you know I carry no brief for the Roman Catholic Church. But I don't hate people for being Catholic any more than I hate people for being Muslim or hate people for being Jewish or animist or Jain or Hindu or Buddhist. It is the institutions with which I have a problem, not the people who practice them. But the right wing was hopping mad, and it is safe to say that for some in Dallas that day, the fear was not that the president was dead, but that he wasn't. Sweet Jesus. It is 47 years, and still that river of monstrous hate flows on seemingly unabated. I have audio for you this evening. Audio for you of Kentucky's incoming junior senator, Rand Paul. We're going to take some time and listen to some of this, because when I looked at the date and I saw November the 22nd, 2010, and on this date I can never help reflecting on where this country would have gone, what this country would have done, what this country might have been had John Kennedy but lived. It was hard not to see a sort of frightening parallel in the audio that I'm about to play for you. Because similar things were being said in the days and months and weeks leading up to November the 22nd, 1963. Similar things were being said, not the same, not precisely the same way, but by the ideological and bigoted forebears of today's teabaggers. I offer you Rand Paul.
The economy keeps getting overheated and overheated. That's how we got into this mess. But we're getting into another mess now because we've got the interest rates at zero. We're telling everybody, go out and buy another car. Bring in your old car. We'll give you $4,500 for it, but you need to borrow $20,000 more to buy the new car. So everybody becomes more indebted. And as a country, that's not good. It's sort of this mentality, go to the mall, spend your money, and everything will be okay. It doesn't make any sense to you individually, and it can't make any sense for an economy. I think it's a little scary in our country that we're doing what's called political profiling. You know.
Now, a quick note before we get into the meat of this. This is an interview that was conducted with none other than one of the biggest hucksters in the United States, a guy by the name of Alex Jones. And I suppose Rand Paul felt comfortable when he sat down to talk. This interview is about 14 months old. The name of it is Thought Crimes USA. Mm-hmm. And you're going to hear Rand Paul in full flower. You're going to hear things that you might find somewhat sickening. But what we're listening for is a tone. What we're listening for are elements of an ideology. And I submit to you that it is the same kind of ideology that led to the horrors of November the 22nd, 1963.
I think it's a little scary in our country that we're doing what's called political profiling. You know, people were worried about profiling people for the color of their skin. Now we're profiling people for the color of their thoughts. You know, what are you thinking? Do you believe in something really scary like the Constitution? You might be a dangerous person.
Who has said that? Who has made that assertion anywhere? Over here on the imaginary left, who has said that it's dangerous to believe in the Constitution? We're rational people, right? Believe in the Constitution? I don't believe in the Constitution. I know the Constitution is real. It is substantive. It is substance. It has four corners. It has ink writing on paper. It can be visited in the National Archives, and it contains principles that set out the form, structure, and nature of our government. I have never heard a person suggest, as Rand Paul apparently makes up in the simmering little settlings between his ears that pass for brains. I have never heard anyone suggest that you're a dangerous person. You might believe in something scary like the Constitution. You might be a dangerous person. Where in God's name does that come from? It comes from the right wing. It comes from the same crowd that prattles about taking their country back. You know, since the brown man got in their White House. That's where it comes from. Do let us continue.
We said in that report out of Missouri, the Missouri Department of Homeland Security said, if you believe in the Constitution or supported Ron Paul or Bob Barr, you might be a terrorist. So something said...
No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
So benign and something you would think so wholesome as believing in our country's founding document has now been turned on its head, and we're the ones to be investigated. I think times of crisis is when we have to worry the most about things. You know, Rahm Emanuel, who's a chief advisor to President Obama, said, let no good crisis go past without allowing government to grow. These are our chances for government to grow stronger and for more security at the expense of liberty. And it's happened before.
Interestingly, while they managed to show video of Rahm Emanuel speaking, and while I am certainly no apologist for Rahm Emanuel, they couldn't seem to find the actual quote of Rahm Emanuel saying that. Perhaps that's because he didn't. Or perhaps that's because he didn't say it in that context. But you see, facts don't matter to Rand Paul, and they don't matter to Alex Jones. Facts don't matter. Alex Jones's purpose in putting this out is to make a fast buck. That's Alex Jones's purpose in everything he does. He's a hustler. He's a huckster. He's a snake oil salesman. Rand Paul's purposes in saying such insanity are what? Yeah, to fire up his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing base.
You have severe crisis, that's when sometimes strong leaders arise. You know, you had the money destroyed in Germany in 1923.
Oh dear, here it comes. The money was destroyed in Germany in 1923. Here it comes.
And out of that chaos came Hitler, who promised that these awful people were the ones doing this to you and we need to round them up. And
okay, Rand, but you've mentioned Germany, you've mentioned Hitler. Gosh, who might you be thinking is a modern 21st century Hitler, Rand? Who?
Them in camps. And the liberties just went out the window, but people actually democratically and voted in a Hitler. And I worry about that again in our country.
Voted in a Hitler? And I worry about that in our country? Oh, this could only go one place.
Money is destroyed in our country. Could we get a time where a strong leader comes forward and says, we just need security. I'll make you safe, but just give me your liberty. Give me your liberty, and I'll make you safe.
You mean like George W. Bush did? Oh, wait, no, this is an Alex Jones piece, and that's Rand Paul, and George Dim Leader is off talking to the horses or something. No, he's scared of horses, talking to the cattle. Who knows? Playing his Game Boy. Who could he possibly be comparing to Hitler? Who could Rand Paul possibly be comparing to one of the worst mass murderers of the 20th century? Who could he possibly be comparing him to?
Again. And unfortunately, some people accept that, you know, but we have to remember what Ben Franklin said. He says, you know, those who trade their liberty for security will have neither. And that's an important maxim to remember, is that you never get both. And it's hard to get your liberty back once you've given it up.
Talk about the reports that we're hearing, like Obama supporters are going out and they even set up a tattletale line at one point to, you know, people who criticize Obama and kind of turn him in, they've since stopped that particular piece. But how does that, you know,
Do they have brown shirts on? Is it a youth patrol that talking about hate speech? Well, I did watch one of the announcers the other day, and they were saying,
do they have brown shirts on? Huh? Those Obama supporters? Bingo!
He danced around it and danced around it and danced around it, but eventually he had to come home. Obama's Hitler. Isn't he just charming?
Here's the poll. Do you think if you criticize President Obama that it's hate speech? Well, for goodness sake, criticism of a political figure and they're going to call it hate speech, that's a dangerous sign that freedom of speech may be under attack next if we have to be careful about what we say. And so, no, I think criticism is what makes the country great, and that puts the leadership...
Unless somebody's criticizing you and one of your supporters stomps her head. Right, Rand?
Have to defend what they're doing. That's why the town hall process is good. I was talking with my brother on the way down here, and we were talking about how his congressman at the town hall only accepted questions on cards, and then the county chairman screened them, and 40% of them were taken out, so only friendly questions were allowed. You couldn't raise your hand. So that's what it's going to come to. If they do town halls at all, they're going to have screened questions because they're becoming fearful that the people might ask them a hard question.
How do you feel about this uprising? Seeing the people
Uprising? Really, Alex? An uprising?
And these aren't like kids, you know, protesting that are college. These are adult working people.
I think it goes back to what we talked about there being an unease upon the land, a discontent that's growing and festering, and that...
Growing and festering. But, Rand, is it being fed? Monsters can't grow without being fed. Are you one of the people who's feeding it? Did you help create such a frenzy that a woman got her head stomped at one of your appearances by one of your lackeys? Why, yes, Rand. Yes, you're feeding the monster.
The Obama administration's gone too far to the left too quickly, and they want to take over.
Come on. If there's a left in this country, we're it, right? Obama's gone too far to the left? When? Oh, tell me about it. I want to hear about it. I'd feel so much better about it. I'd feel so much better about him. But he hasn't. He's so center-right, it's not funny. But that's okay, because teabaggers and Alex Jones followers and the like, they're not much interested in facts. They just know that there's a brown man in our White House, and our country, the flag is falling, and we gotta take our country back.
Healthcare. They want to take over cap and trade. They want to do all these...
They want to take over healthcare? Really? Did I miss the part where Barack Obama delivered that stirring oration exhorting the Congress to pass universal single-payer healthcare? When did that happen? I would have been dancing in the streets. I'd love to have healthcare. I'd love to be able to buy my medicine. Guess I just missed it. Darn it. That's the tough thing. You just can't keep up with all of that liberal leftism.
Things so fast that I think there is a backlash forming, and it's not really coming very well from the Republican Party. I think it's more spontaneous that people are just showing up and they're unhappy. But they want an alternative. For example, with health care, they don't want someone just to oppose Obamacare. They want someone to say, what do we do? How do we make health care better? You know, and it's not just access, it's expense. I hear more complaints about how much people spend on their health insurance than I do about access. But I have a plan that I've been promoting that I think would transform things. We need to make health insurance more like term life insurance.
What?
When you buy term life insurance, you buy it over many years. So, for example, I have term life insurance, and it's a 20-year contract. and I'm halfway into it. But if I have a heart attack because of all these stressful questions today and I survive, my term life insurance stays the same. I'm on a 20-year contract. But if I have a heart attack this year or tonight, but I survive, when my health insurance expires this year, they'll double my rates. I have a very high deductible, and my health insurance still went up 17% last year. So even people who are part of the health care system...
This man is insane.
I'm a physician, recognize that the costs are rising rapidly, and I know people are unhappy about that. But my question is, are the prices rising because we have too much capitalism in healthcare or too little capitalism? I would make the point that we have very little capitalism. We have private ownership, and I make a profit, and it's privately done, but the prices don't fluctuate. In true capitalism, the price should fluctuate. So when you go...
What, Barney? The prices don't fluctuate? I think he was just talking about his own policy going up. What did he say, 17%? That's a fluctuation. It's an upward fluctuation. And that's the only way it fluctuates, is up and up and up, because it is, Rand Paul, profit-driven. It's not need-driven. It's not cost-driven. It is profit-driven.
Go and buy things like a cell phone. They're incredibly cheap. Every day they're cheaper. But there's many people producing them, and the prices float, and you can choose your product on price. If you come to me as a doctor and you're over 65, the government sets the price. Everybody charges the same across the country, so you can't choose your doctor or your procedure based on price. And a lot of medicine is elective.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people that are out there thinking, you know what, if I could just go to the doctor who uses the rusty scalpels, he might cut the price by a couple of bucks. And I'll take my chance with tetanus. He's insane. But he's also dangerous. Because he is one of those people fanning the flames of the kind of hell that yawns open out of Pandora's box as it did on November the 22nd, 1963. You know, it's going to get crazier.
It's hard to choose your doctor when you're having a heart attack, but if you have elective surgery or you're having your tonsils out or having something done that's elective, you could choose things on price, but you can't. They also make surgery centers very hard to open, so everything's done in the hospital.
But Rand, for-profit insurance companies negotiate those same kinds of fee schedules. It's not just the government. The insurance companies do it too. And they try to squeeze every last little drop of profit out of every last physician in their plan. But it's okay when they do it, but it's not okay when Medicare negotiates a lower price. This man is insane. This man is going to the United States Senate. Does that make you sweat? It does me. Because he's got the same kind of policy ideas that newly minted West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin does. They're going to have a yee-haw, by God, golly, shucks, good time when it comes to sitting down and talking about the communities in Appalachia that they both support destroying. Hoo-wee! The man is insane.
But if you had surgery centers, all of a sudden you'd have more competition. So there are a lot of ways to bring competition into healthcare, but we're not talking about them because all we're talking about is injecting more government into healthcare. Well, I mean, the first sort of thing you see with martial law is
Martial law? We're going to martial law now? Is this the part where we talk about the Obama re-education camps?
Mandates, and they're talking about making it mandatory. I worry because the last flu vaccine we had in the 1970s, more people died from the vaccine than died from the swine flu. I think you have to use your brain, but I think every individual should be allowed to make that choice. For example, 20 years ago, my parents gave me...
Vaccine programs or martial law? Sweet jump of Jupiter.
Smallpox vaccine, and I would do it again. You know, smallpox was an awful disease, and the vaccine wiped smallpox out of you know, civilization, basically. The only people left with their bioterrorism labs that have smallpox. I would have also taken the polio vaccine. I know a lot of people had polio, and we stopped it. But am I going to take the swine flu vaccine? Unlikely, until I'm certain that it's safe, and I'm not going to have my kids take it until I know it's safe. But I'm not absolutely saying that I won't take the vaccine, but I say you have to be careful. You have to weigh the risks of the disease versus the risks of the vaccine. But I'm not going to tell people.
But Rand, who's producing that vaccine? Is that the government producing that vaccine? Why, no, Rand. That's another one of your free market for-profit buddies. You know, corporate big pharma. Well, I think you're going to have to walk some of this back, Rand. Because your owners are not going to like what you're saying.
Who think it's a bad idea that they have to take it because everybody should be allowed to make their own health care decisions. And that's the problem with allowing more and more government. There was a vaccine about 3 years ago for rotavirus. It's a diarrhea-type virus for children. They started giving the vaccine, but kids started dying from a blockage in their intestine, which they linked to the vaccine, but it took them 6 months to figure this out.
And could that be because the for-profit guys wanted it hustled through the FDA screening and approval process faster than it was otherwise supposed to go? Could that be part of it? Because there was a big profit out there to be made, Rand Paul? Huh? This man is insane.
And meanwhile, they had already talked about making it mandatory. The whole problem is not necessarily good versus bad on vaccines. It's whether it should be mandatory or the individual makes the decision.
Martial law, remember?
And sometimes you want to not be the first one to get a new procedure. You want to see if it works well before you choose. Well, the way the freedom movement can get involved and help me is through visiting our website, randpaul2010.com. And we're already
got to get the pitch in. Got to get the pitch in. Got to get the schmucks and the rubes digging deep in their wallet to support freedom and Rand Paul. Because, you know, Obama's Hitler. Thank God Rand Paul's out there protecting us from all of that galloping socialism. Kate writing in. She says, thanks for playing that sound today. These are sad hours for me because I still remember the day how I was frightened and didn't understand why the president would be murdered. Until you mentioned it, I didn't realize that I still remember the sun shining in the window, the snow outside, and how confused by what I was by what I was seeing on the TV screen. I was waking up from a very rowdy house party in Great Falls, Montana, just an hour north of where I live today. I was 7 months out of high school and was struggling to find my way in the world. Just months before, the motorcade had passed through Great Falls on the way to the airport. He was so beautiful and powerful looking when he waved and smiled at me as the car passed 10 feet from me. In the ensuing years, my political naivete has changed into jaded cynicism. I would like to call in to share those memories, but I wouldn't be able to suppress the tears. Nothing has been the same since that morning. No, it hasn't, Kate. No, it hasn't. And a generation of hopeful young optimists was rendered in an instant, in the crack of a firearm, into a nation of cynics. Dreams died that day. Hopes died that day. A lot died that day with John Kennedy. A lot died. And so, your thoughts on the situation are more than welcome. You know how to reach the program, right? The phone number, of course, and they do work. I'm looking forward to three hours and 3 days of untechnically impeded broadcasting. I can't tell you how that excites me. The number is 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4. Head on. That's 877-443-2366. On your nickel, it is 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. It's all that easy. And, of course, there is a great deal more to talk about this evening. But for starters, I felt like we sort of had to come here. Because, as I've observed in the past, this nation took a sickening lurch that day from which we have never recovered. The Johnson presidency, you know, better than I was a baby. But the Johnson presidency, although it had sparks of greatness, was dogged by Vietnam. And out of the murder of John Kennedy that afternoon in Dallas, we got Richard Nixon. In 1968, and Richard Nixon in 1972. You can argue that every rotten thing that happened politically in this country, every rotten thing grew like a noxious weed out of the blood spilled on the asphalt pavement in Dallas at Dealey Plaza that day. So light up the phones. Let's talk. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Turn my head one day and the man is gone. Lord, he's gone. Did you love the things they stood by? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? And we'll be free someday, soon it's gonna be one day. Has anybody here see my old friend John. Ooh, can you tell me where he's gone? How to he freed a lot of people. But it seems the good die young. Cause I turned around one day and the man was gone. Just like that, he was gone.
Usually when you hear that song, it's the original by Dion, but I couldn't resist the recording by Ray Charles. David in Tennessee noting Ray's got a sort of first-person soul to him, whereas Dion's was learned. Ray's came with birth. Moving stuff. So a couple of lines open if you want to get busy and fill them up. You're more than welcome to do so. You know the number 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, and to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, long time no see.
Hey, how's it going?
It's Tobias.
Yeah, how are you?
Well, I'm alive.
And glad we are to hear it.
Thought I would touch base with you.
I appreciate it.
How are things, Bob?
Things are, well, it's another Monday. Leading up to a holiday, and a tough Monday it looks like it's going to be. It's kind of hard for November the 22nd not to be a tough Monday, Tobias.
Yeah, I know.
How about you?
I'm vertical, so sometimes. So hanging in there. As my father used to say, like a hare in a biscuit.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Well, what brings you to the program? I mean, anything in particular? Or?
No, we haven't talked in a while.
It has been a while.
Haven't been able, really. Cruise into the chat room from time to time, but I listen when I can. But,
yeah, you're getting a hello in the chat room right now. Well, you're in the chat room, so you know.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't take things for granted, Bob.
No. Elaborate, please.
Well, like, as you know, I mean, I'm a man of faith.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not. I've taken the term churchian. I don't like the churchian. People who are, their faith is church. their faith is, they're the modern Pharisees, and we're plagued with them. That's not me. That's not my, you know, I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Christ. And if you choose not to be, that's fine.
Sure.
That's your choice, because that's why I'm, you know, when Tiller was assassinated, you know, and they threatened the other two that performed late-term abortions, you know, Nova and TBS did a big thing about it. You have to forgive me. My memory isn't what it used to be.
I understand. Don't worry about it.
Plagued by little yellow notepads everywhere. But immediately, I wrote letters to both clinics in Colorado and I think the other one's in Wichita.
Mm-hmm. Nebraska, maybe?
Maybe. And told them that I'm a minister. And said, look, you know, I'm not a nut. This is not a me coming to protest you. I will travel at my expense to your facility. And I will wear my civic attire. You know, the black frock, white collar, that's the official name, civic attire.
Yes.
And I will act as an escort. Because somebody needs to know. The world's not crazy, Bob.
Yes. And the you know, the trick lies, Tobias, in how do we respond to it?
I've had the church folk get in my face and say, how can you profess to be a Christian and be pro-choice? I said, well, how can you profess to be a Christian and not be? That's the very essence of our faith was pro-choice. God didn't wave a magic wand and say, well, you're all with me. We have to exercise our free will and make a choice. And what you're saying is, you don't like, if you don't like the choices somebody makes, you're gonna firebomb their clinic or their place of business, or you're gonna follow them home. I've had so many of these people, I have unconditional love for my child as long as they do everything I tell them to do. You know, I said, well, what about when your child brings her girlfriend home from college and professes her undying love for her? Well, then I would kick her out of the house and never talk to her again. I said, that's Christian undying love.
Yeah, that's right. That's some love.
So how are you not choking to death on your own hypocrisy? You know, I have very people in my own family who've ostracized themselves from me because they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing. You know, that by, you know, my brother ran off from his wife and now she's destitute and we've taken to helping her buy groceries and those kind of things because, you know, the economy's really hit her hard and now, I mean, she's disabled and we're buying her groceries and I go, fine, we were taking her groceries and I've commented to my wife on the road she lives on when she turned off the county road to get to her house. There's five churches between the road and her house. And I said, but yet, you know, she's literally starving. That's the Christian charity. I said, if you park in any church parking lot, people are like, why don't you go to church? And I said, because, you know, the churches are the single biggest waste of real estate. They're the biggest tax dodge in human history. Park in any church parking lot, and I've never been able not to do this. And walk. You won't have to walk a mile before you will find people in profound, and I don't mean, well, we've fallen on hard times this month, it's kind of lean, we're going to have to hit the ramen. I mean, you're going to find people in profound destitution in the shadow, in the very within church bell ringing distance, you know what I mean. And they'll be able to hear the bells of that church.
I know some of what you're talking about. One of the churches here this past weekend, Tobias, had a community Thanksgiving dinner. But you know who was there?
No.
The members of the church.
Yeah, that's usually how it is. I have a friend.
Never mind that. Start stacking up plates. Start, get out that, you know, and go knock on doors here.
I say he's a friend. He's really an acquaintance now. He's only a friend because we went to high school together. He said, well, I have a ministry. That, you know, and he's into martial arts, and he's like, well, and the church lets us use their facility, and we're using that as a ministry. And so, really, So I can bring anybody I want to, you know, that's, you know, they don't, they say, oh, well, they gotta be, as long as they're Christian. I said, it's not a ministry. It's a fellowship.
Wait, go. What? Huh? You gotta be a Christian first?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that a little like Landover Baptist, unsaved, unwanted?
Right. And I said, so it's a fellowship. I corrected him. I said, it's a fellowship. He's, no, it's a ministry. I said, you're not, then who are you ministering to? Each other? I said, you know, earth to Pharisee, you're a Pharisee.
It's a mutual admiration society. That's not a ministry.
You know, if you go back to high school. I don't know, Eric, go back to high school. Do it with the other hand. It feels like somebody else is doing it. Dump.
Even in the quietest moments, you got me.
I'm like, you know, this is exactly why people, I said, I've been on airplanes for hours traveling from Lexington, Kentucky to Los Angeles, which should be a war crime to stick people in a metal tube full of stale air for that long. But hey, and you hear, you know, and if I know, oh, you're a minister, and I just take it. It's okay, tell me what's wrong with Christianity. And they just unload and say, yeah, I agree. And they go, well, what kind of minister are you? The right kind. The church is the problem. They're the ticks on the dog that are sucking the blood out of the dog to the point they're going to kill it. You know.
And I suspect a lot of people have not just feelings, but anecdotes and actual events to back that up. We just heard in from our buddy David in South Carolina, and he said there are people all around here who are drawing Social Security, both retirement and disability, on Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, and unemployment compensation, and yet proudly proclaim that they vote straight Repiglican.
That's all around me. You should have seen the wrong, because we're in Rand Paul country.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah.
And, of course, you know, I didn't vote for Rand Paul. You know, I voted for Jack Conway. And said, I don't know how you people can, you know, talking to people at line at the polls, I said, you know, people talking, I know Rand Paul, I said, if you knew, just tells me, I told a woman there, I said, I don't, this shows me how uneducated you are about the candidates in play here. I said, you really don't know who this guy is. And it's the, you really can't call it ignorance because it's willful. Because when they're presented with facts, I mean, I said, we've jumped the shark on facts so long ago, they're not interested in facts. It's their own, it's a belief system, you know, it's become a religion. Because it has to...
Well, and remember, Tobias, while we're drawing this line between the present time and 47 years ago, it has become, it's almost unspoken to remark upon or recall the fact that there were people all over the South, white folks,
mm-hmm.
who did a little dance for joy when they heard that John Kennedy was dead.
Oh, yeah.
It was not, most of the people within the reach of our voices right now can recall their grief if they are of a certain age. And they can recall that sense of something dying in them. But there were a lot of people. Remember, the 1960 election was decided on a very narrow margin in Kennedy's favor.
Right.
And I would say that a third of this country was absolutely dancing. The John Birchers and the anti-communists and the Republicans and the Reagans and the John Waynes and the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Lyndon LaRouche. And people think those people went away. They didn't. You know.
No, they went into hiding for a generation, Tobias. And then via the miracle of the right-wing takeover of the media.
Mm-hmm. The Coors family and Richard Millenscafe. And
the Kochs and Murdoch and on and on and on. By the miracle of that... And hearing every day the purveyors of filth like Rush Limbaugh,
sure.
Talking about feminazis and why don't you call me back when you get that bone out of your nose, and saying all these disgusting, hateful, bigoted, prejudiced, racist things,
mm-hmm.
day after day after day, then slowly that generation that had already, that had in the meantime been raising another generation of bigots, began to realize that it was okay to talk about it openly again.
Right.
And they're back, Tobias, and they are back with a vengeance. And it falls to us to at least be able to identify it. Tobias, my friend, it is awfully good to hear from you. You take care, and don't be a stranger, okay?
As long as I'm able.
All right, brother. Take care. You Happy too. Thanksgiving to you.
And you as well.
And bye now. Bye. Tobias calling from deep behind the corn pone curtain in Rand Paul country in Kentucky. David in Tennessee noting, I wish I had a nickel for every time I heard, well, too bad he had to get killed, but what'd he expect being what he is and taking the presidency? Because see, on November the 22nd, 1963, there were a whole lot of people back then who said, I want my country back. They're infringing on our liberties by telling us we gotta serve the Negroes at the lunch counter. Remember Lester Maddox and his axe handle? He was catapulted sort of teabag style into Georgia politics because he ran a restaurant and he carried around an axe and said, axe handle, and said he'd take it to any colored that tried to come in. Right? Yeah. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, like you, this is a rough day for me today. And pursuant to what Tobias said, and I'm going to quote one of the Cavalier poets who once said, love is not love which alters when an alteration finds.
Indeed. Who was that?
I think it was Sutton. One of the Cavalier poets after the restoration period of Charles II. But I didn't call you to quote the Norton Anthology tonight. I did not.
That's all right. It was a nice addition.
I was barely 15 when John Kennedy's hand touched my hand. And his hand touched my heart. Always been there. Always. I'll never forget him.
Was it a campaign stop?
Right.
Tell us about it.
I was in the ninth grade in high school, and my teacher had taken us over to a rally in Columbia. He was there. And it was a walkabout, but I had the opportunity of being on the front row to shake his hand.
Do you recall what he talked about?
Basically, how he had planned to establish a new frontier and to galvanize people into public service and to bring forth a new beginning in a nuclear age when the nuclear age was extremely, very much a front runner at that time. The Cold War was beginning to really ascend into its heights, and people were very frightened. And we needed a young man like Kennedy, the winner of the Navy Cross. Second only to the Medal of Honor.
True.
A man of letters, a man of education, and a man of compassion, in spite of his well-positioned place and birth. And years later, when I found out that he died, part of me died with him. You mentioned the Reagans the night Kennedy was shot.
Yes.
They weren't attending a party. They had the fucking party.
Oh, they were hosting it.
They were hosting it. And it was the only party in Hollywood that was not canceled. And Nancy was standing at the door. And she was telling yes as they came in. One of them was surprised that the party was still on. Well, you can't talk about you-know-what. Those were her exact words. And at the bar were Robert Taylor, John Wayne, and a couple of the other assholes who were toasting with highballs. And that's the direct quote from Kitty Kelly.
Toasting. Toasting. Toasting the murder of John Kennedy.
Exactly. 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 Exactly what they were doing. Now, the Reagans weren't attending the party. They were hosting it. They refused to cancel it because of the president's death. And that ought to tell you something about the caliber of those people. That's for sure. And I can remember seeing him that morning when he deplaned at Dallas and how good he looked and how beautiful Mrs. Kennedy looked. And, you know, just a promise. Here we have a man we can be proud of. A man whose wife we can be proud of. And who could do things that no one else could do. In spite of his many health problems and things of that nature, that man suffered the tortures of the damned to perform in his presidential office. We will never know how much pain and suffering he went through because of a bad back and being an Addisonian, what problems he did have. But yet in 1962, he was able to stand up to Khrushchev and people like that who were willing to throw this world into a thermonuclear holocaust and say, you will not do this. We will find a way. And he was a man who had respect for power and for peace. And he also had a respect for humanity. And he also had a respect for the role of our nation as it was to play, hopefully through his second term and other people who would have the sense enough to follow him. And I'm going to close here with one paragraph from that last speech that was in his pocket that I'm sure was covered with blood.
The one he was going to deliver in Dallas.
At the trademark luncheon, exactly. And if I don't read too well, it's because I'm really not in my very best form tonight, okay?
I understand.
And he said, and I quote, we in this country, in this generation, are by destiny rather than by choice. The watchmen on the walls of world freedom. We ask, therefore, that we may be worthy of our power and responsibility. We may exercise our strength with wisdom and restraint, and that we may achieve in our time and for all time the ancient vision of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. That must always be our goal, and the righteousness of our cause must always underline our strength. For as was written long ago, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waiteth but in vain.
True then, true now. Thank you, Jim.
Mr. President, I love you then. I love you. Love you now. And I will always love you. As long as there's breath in my body.
Well and eloquently said, Jim. Take care. So we will take a little break and come back. Your reflections, your thoughts are more than welcome. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Horn. Remembering. I'm Bob Kincaid.
For the God, baby, I shouted out. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
You know, I think that's probably the most profound song that the Stones ever wrote. And they wrote some pretty profound stuff, but... Man, I can remember when I was told as just a little bitty fundamentalist that merely listening to the Rolling Stones would it was like opening a port. Of course, we didn't talk like this back then. But it'd be like opening a port on your computer to the devil himself. No, really. Again, you wonder why I'm as scarred as I am. Well, that's part of the reason. But we go immediately back to the phones. The lines are kind of jammed up, but we'll get some cleared and get folks on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, it's David, and I'm a Bobaholic.
Hi, David.
How you been, Bob?
Kind of heavy stuff tonight.
Well, it is, and I've got something that is both heavy and maybe a little bit outside and have a slightly different color to this Kennedy time. Let's go back to the fall of 1962. I enter the University of Tennessee. I'm a really goofy little freshman trying to figure out what the heck's going on, and as everybody did at that time, you had to enroll in ROTC, so I'm an Army ROTC cadet, and once a week we go around and try to march, and now and then we get told somebody's coming to town, and we're all going to form up and welcome him. And in the spring, May, we were told that President Lyndon Baines Johnson, Vice President, this was May of 1963, LBJ was coming to town, and he was going to have a parade through the University of Tennessee for reasons that have long since been forgotten. And he was going to give a short speech somewhere, and then he's going to leave. So all of us ROTC cadets, the Army kids and the Air Force kids, we all had to form up along Cumberland Avenue and look like we were glad to see him. Oh, yeah, and by the way, he was bringing, you know, one of the daughters. And I don't know whether it was Lucy Petals or Furberg or maybe it was Lady Bush. I don't know. Some damn Johnson daughter. So we're all lined up out there, and the whole damn thing's running late. And some of us couldn't get to labs on a Thursday afternoon because that was, you know, when they did all that stuff. But within 10 feet of me, here comes LBJ and this woman with this really, what I believe to be, even then, a color-assisted bouffant hairdo that you could have bounced quarters off of, and it was said daughter, whichever one it was. And they stopped within 15 feet for whatever reason, and here was Lyndon Baines Johnson, sweating like a pig, bored senseless, those ears that, you know, went down to the points of his collar, sitting there in this really so-so convertible, looking like he could not wait for a stiff drink or for the whole damn thing to be over. Okay, finally. He leaves. All of us kids in, you know, badly, you know, sweat-stained, starched Army ROTC uniforms, we get to call the whole thing off and, you know, with our fake IDs, seek out beer we shouldn't have been drinking. All right, flash forward. The next fall, I'm an entering sophomore. I'm in a class. The guy teaching it was a fellow named Newton. We couldn't call him professor because he didn't have a doctorate, so he was just an instructor. He was Mr. Newton. It was about 10:30 in the morning, and as would happen in those days, he, a heavy smoker, went out into the hall to smoke while we did whatever things he told us to do, and he came back in and he was white. And he said, I don't know quite how to tell you people this, but, and he explained what had happened and how we were going to try to get through that day for classes, but we weren't, he wasn't sure, the university wasn't sure, they didn't know what would happen over the next few hours. And mostly, Bob, everybody, whether it was an instructor, whether it was a graduate student, whether it was a goofy sophomore like me, we all just sat, looked out windows, stared, and immediately, you know, sadness, some anger, all of this stuff just poured in. You know, like these movie scenes where the dam breaks, and here come, you know, and we were all just looking around, and for the rest of that day, and on into the next day or two, everybody, like us, we were crushed. We were just, it was a horrible blow. And oddly enough, before I left that class, it took less than 20 minutes, I began to get a little bit angry, and I thought, this is horrible. Somebody, he, whoever, whatever entity it was, killed that glorious man. And now that big-eared, bored son of a bitch that looked like every high school principal in Knox County, Tennessee, that made life miserable for everybody in the goddamn high school. Now that son of a bitch is president. We are so, and I gotta say it the way I thought it at the time, we are so fucked.
And you were, weren't you? Not being flip, but this country was.
And every turn of the wheel with that man, I had more and more reason to say, you know, well, no way to say, he's the president. I'm a little kid and I get all this stuff in ROTC, respect the uniform. If you don't respect the person, respect the uniform around the world. Well, he's the president and you've got to, more and more, there was this escalating, no, that's not my president. Had I had a vote, you know, in 1960, I would have voted for President Kennedy. One of the biggest moments, you know, it put me off voting for 6 or 7 years. Wait a second, you know, even though I was legal to vote shortly thereafter, wait a minute, I didn't vote for this idiot, and I'm certainly not going to vote for him now. Wait a second, he's running against that other guy. Well, geez, you know, I guess if I would vote, I'd vote for Johnson. Oh, brother. You know, the youth...
Your generation started holding their noses early.
Well, yeah, either that or saying, maybe later. More beer?
Yeah. But...
And you're right. The whole thing cascaded down to Nixon, which really started the stuff starting at the top and seeking its own level.
And now, I mean, I'm sorry. I think if we worked at it, David, we could probably make a link to everything. I read a story earlier today. You mentioning Nixon sort of lit it up in my mind. I read a story earlier today about how, I guess, the president has gone to Henry Kissinger to get his endorsement of the START Treaty.
Well, he'd been flirting with that for some time, and he'd been, you know, I could tell by the way Gibbs and I did their little pressers and stuff. They were thrilled that Henry had come out and, you know, been as vibrant as he could be. Talk about another guy that, you know, sleeping in a coffin with dirt from the homeland. Jesus Christ, and his brother Eric. Oh, you know, but at least Dick looks like somebody traded dirt on it. He ain't looking so good these days. But yes, it is a horror that President Obama is looking to Henry Kissinger for guidance. Hello?
You remember that? Remember that great old film, Mr. Roberts? Henry Fonda.
Oh.
You remember when Fonda finally breaks down and starts screaming at Cagney? And he says, I know they needed people out here on the in the ships, and I know that there weren't a lot, but my God, they scraped the bottom of the barrel to get you. mean, you talk about scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Talk about needing a mulligan. Come on now.
Kissinger?
Oh, no. Well, that's how desperate the man is. Sadly, that he's looking to something like Kissinger for validation. He's looking over there, and he hasn't, the poor fellow just hasn't figured it out. If Barack Hussein Obama could cause Jesus Christ in all of his glory to stand barefooted on his desk in the Oval Office, Sean Hannity would condemn him for not offering the right chair.
Hear, hear.
He's got no chance by pulling opinion from anywhere, anytime. You know, it just drives me nuts that he does that sort of stuff. Wouldn't he have been better off if he'd have just gone center left rather than center hard right? And how much more crap could he be taking right now?
Well, that's what he doesn't understand, David. He doesn't understand that there is no right answer. Okay, here's tonight's obligatory Star Trek reference. President Not Sure doesn't understand that he's in the Kobayashi Maru simulation, and he doesn't get to go and Jimmy the computer.
Thank you. Captain Kirk just said, wait a second, I'm breaking out.
Yeah, when you're dealing with Repiglicans, it is unwinnable as long as you think that you can get anything done with them.
Well, I think I said to you once in an email, I think I wrote to you once in an email, that President Obama still thinks the tactics, the strategies, the methodology that worked for him as, was he Harvard or Yale, whichever law school he went to, that he thinks that the tactics that worked with conservatives when he was the Law Review editor will work with elected Republicans. And all of these brickbats against his head have not convinced him otherwise. And I just do not understand it.
Well, you know that guy that we want to inhabit the White House and just sort of follow Obama around everywhere, going every now and then, going, Jesus, Barack, that guy?
Oh.
Remember him? He needs a twin.
You know who I'd like it to be?
Well, the twin needs to be the guy standing next to him, David, who every time Barack says, well, maybe if we extended a hand to them and negotiated with them in good faith by compromising on, and the guy standing next to the Jesus Barack guy, after the guy says, Jesus Barack, the second guy goes, no, they still hate you.
I would settle for a 33-year-old Lewis Black with a very large rubber chicken. And every time Barack Obama pulled that crap, Lewis Black would be going, WTF, very loudly, and a rubber chicken would get him right between the eyes.
Wah, wah, wah.
And then he would explain to him, we've done this before, sir. Oh, that just drives me crazy.
I know. David, it's a rare treat to hear from you.
Well, thank you for the compliment, but, you know, I flash back to that steaming May afternoon, and I got to see LBJ and what's-her-name and, you know, standing on Cumberland and just sweating and hurting and wondering why and thinking, oh, thank God I'm near to him. He's just the vice president. You know, go somewhere and open a ballpark or, you know, maybe christen a sewer.
Go swing a bottle of liquor at a boat.
Take that lady that wants to plant a tree, a bean, share a shrub. Take her with you. Let her swing the bottle. We just don't drink in the bar. You know, anything. And I thought, I'm rid of it. Good. You know, he's a nice president. You know, there he is. You know, just keep kissing your sister for 7 more years, pal. Oh, Lord. And then he's the president. And there, that was just the beginning. Well, you got real calm.
Take care, David. Bye now.
See ya.
My hand writer, David in Tennessee, who doesn't call that very much, that very often. Hey, welcome to the program.
I remember.
What's up, Susan?
I was about Jim's age. By the way, Jim, you had me in tears. You have a massive...
I've gotten several notes. Jim touched a lot of people tonight.
Anyway, what I wanted to mention was the right wing after they finished celebrating. And by the way, I want to mention the classroom in Dallas, northern Dallas, North Dallas, that proceeded to applaud when the news broke.
Say again?
A classroom of school children when the news broke. This was in Dallas when the news broke that the president was dead. They applauded. The teacher tried to walk that back and cover it up, but it didn't alter the fact that they had done it. And what makes this interesting is this very exclusive neighborhood that these children came from. Not too many decades later, guess who crawled out of that neighborhood?
Who?
Well, he took a shot at Ronald Reagan.
Oh, is that where the Hinckleys lived?
Yeah. And he would have been just about the right age. I can't prove that he actually went to that school, but he'd have been just about the right age to pick up on that, that particular sentiment. Anyway, the right wing made it their mission, once he was dead, to destroy his name.
And they haven't stopped to this day. The only time they say something good about him is when they trot out his tax cut program. See, Kennedy knew the tax cuts were good for the rich.
Now, here are some first-hand memories. Here's what I remember. I remember sitting there watching the television as people peacefully, without being arrested, there were no arrests in that period of time, in the several days after that. John Kennedy lay in state in the Capitol, and people, by the hundreds of thousands, they came and they stood in line, several abreast, rich people, poor people, black people, Asian, colored, young, old, it didn't matter. They stood there, they helped each other, and they cried. They stood there all day, all night, all another day, and that line inched slowly, ever so slowly forward.
You know, that audio that I played at the beginning of the program from Walter Cronkite, Susan, necessarily, it was accompanied by video. And at one point, there's a cutaway shot. It's just a more or less static camera shot of the hall where Kennedy was going to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people looking kind of lost. And then in the center of the shot, there's an African American man in, you know, the black and white livery of service staff. And he just takes one of the white cloth napkins and presses it to his face. There were people who were devastated, and there are raw and open wounds to this day.
And mine is one of them. I will never forget this. I will never forgive it. And one of the things that is amazing, you never hear about these people, these very quiet people who came ever so quietly. And occasionally there would be teenager with a guitar playing very softly a folk song. I remember one where a commentator mentioned that it was a German song, and it was something about somebody had a friend who was shot. He had a comrade, and he was shot. And why wasn't it him? And there were other, you know, blowing in the wind and things like this. And it was ever so quiet. There were no arrests. These people, they cried together. They very carefully went forward. They helped each other. They kept each other's place in line. There were no fights. And then at the funeral, this state funeral that they put together in 3 days, which was unheard of at the time, Winston Churchill, he'd been planning his funeral for almost 2 decades. After the caisson and the major heads of state, there was this kind of nebulous section in the planning that was for, quote, other mourners. If you look at the video of the time, Jackie goes by along with Bobby and Teddy behind the caisson. And there's the crowd, then there's the heads of state. And then ever so quietly and ever so peacefully, this enormous, over a million people crowd, without making a sound, they broke the police lines and they joined the funeral. And they walked behind that casket. And then they peeled off. They didn't want to cause any problems.
I understand. Susan, thank you very much.
They just wanted to say goodbye.
And it's a goodbye that we're
and
still
I'll
not...
I'll never forget seeing that. And I will never forget him. I was 14. I had the worst crush on him.
Well, I just got an email in from Jim, and he just says, thank you, Susan.
Also, I learned from him the soaring oratory, the noblesse oblige, the sheer wonder of him and his whole family. This family, this country was basically, well, John Kennedy and his family gave this country what it had lacked, majesty. Unfortunately, he had to die to do it.
Susan, have a good night, dear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. And we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Reverbo?
Yeah, well, you know what? You've got to hold on while I turn you down on my... I'm calling from you. calling you from a secret underground location.
I understand. I understand, Danny Boy.
There we go. Yeah, I couldn't... I almost let another November 22nd go by without a comment about this. Yeah, I was going to... I thought about having... inviting Carlos, Marcelo, and Santos Traficante over for a little sing-along today. But then I remembered that they were pushing up bindweed. Well, In Salvacante's case, he was putting up seaweed, I guess.
Yeah, right.
The 55-gallon drum, that's a popular way to go with that crowd. And then in the bay. Yeah, we've had this conversation before, possibly last year at this time, and maybe the year before.
You know what? I think that's okay, though.
It bears repeating. If it wasn't for, because of a few well-placed assassins' bullets, the world that's going on right now, as you and I speak, is dramatically altered, dramatically different. And I wonder if people really process this, if they really can grasp this idea of America being, at least the late model American history, being the result of political assassination. Do people even think about that? That's just stuff that you...
Well, yeah, I do. You do. The Horn family does. The world at large? Don't know.
That kind of stuff goes on here. You just wonder if people even... What they even think about that.
There is nothing that unsettles civil society quite like assassination. Murder. Somehow assassination... I don't like the word Revervo. Murder.
It's murder.
Okay, ancient Rome geek moment. You know, the people who murdered Caesar ran around calling themselves liberators and wearing little hats for a while afterward.
Really?
Until a few people came along and said, "You're what? No, you're murderers." Brutus, Cassius, Trebonius, Decimus Brutus. Murderers.
One man's murder is another man's liberator and all that bullshit. But you know, you can say, well, you'd never know. You don't really know. I don't know.
John Fox shot me a note and he said, you know, I want to live in the universe where JFK lived. I've become more convinced as time goes on, this was the event that broke America.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. He does two terms. His brother does two terms. Ronald Reagan just dies a B actor. God, George Jr., George Bush Jr., I mean, he just...
Yeah, Nixon stays in California playing with checkers.
Sure. You never get these... I mean, remember George Bush...
No Watergate.
Protege of John Connolly. Of course, in that case, you kind of wanted him to get...
You know, I mean, my God, look at the list. No Quezon, no Tet Offensive, no anti-war movement.
Probably not.
No Gerald Ford.
No Gerald Ford.
Probably no Jimmy Carter. Certainly no damn Bushes. No Iran-Contra. No October Surprise. No hostage crisis in Iran. You know, because a lot of that was born out of the right-wing Republicans' insistence on playing footsie with that effete snob Pahlavi, you know, the occupant of the peacock throne.
Mm.
No savings and loan debacle, Revervo.
Well, no, I'll throw a couple names in. No Rumsfeld or Cheney.
Sure.
I mean, all these people, this is all ancient hip. People don't realize how...
No Rush Limbaugh.
No, that's right.
No Fox News. We do not begin to contemplate, even conceive, Revervo, of what this world would be had this day not obtained the horrible significance that it has.
You know, people like the Kennedys personally or dislike them. These people understood what public service was all about. They weren't afraid. They didn't feel threatened by people them on the rungs of the ladder beneath them. Not at all.
If November 22nd, 1963 doesn't happen, Reverbo, the Bushes remain a clumsy, inept, grasping, overreaching set of little climbers.
George Jr. spends the rest of his days, you know, in the goddamn stinking Texas desert checking his lizard traps.
Or score.
With his dowsing rod trying to find oil.
Now, damn it, that's a peach lemon, you know it.
The world is so different, and the world might even be a tiny bit more compassionate.
You know, Dick Cheney probably dies of his second or third or fifth heart attack. And the only thing that he's a 1 second reader at the end of the evening news. Former Wyoming Congressman Republican Dick Cheney died today. So what?
Yeah, so what?
You know, does MLK get gunned down? Does Bobby get gunned down?
There's always going to be some pissed off screwballs running around, and you can't say for sure. But there's certainly a climate and an atmosphere that, you know, people say that all the social movements, all these important movements never come from the top. They always get pushed up from the bottom, and that's probably true. But what does come from the top, I think, is kind of an attitude, is you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
A feeling and kind of a national, like, instead of people walking around all pissed off and depressed, you can, you know, this is where Obama, I think, people got the wrong idea about him. You know, he had this great PR message of hope and change, and, you know, really it's just, now people are just completely withdrawn and pissed off again. But, I mean, Kennedy got, I mean, these people got everybody excited about what we could do and where we could go. I mean, people are, you just never forget this stuff. Then you just think of just, you know, these fucking clowns that we've had to deal with since then. God. Yeah, and there you go. Our country is, talk about violence and or political violence. There it is. People think all that kind of stuff just happens in South America. You know, it just happens over in Africa.
You know, imagine an American history in which Nixon doesn't go to China. That means that Prescott Bush Jr. never becomes the president of the U.S.-China Chamber of Commerce. That means there's no Bill Clinton giving most favored nation trading status to the Chinese.
It might mean that the United States doesn't totally abdicate its manufacturing, you know, help me out here.
That we might have an industrial policy to this day?
Yeah, we might, you know, we might not have just thrown everything away.
And then there's Mars.
Well, it's cold and dark up there, Bob.
Or the colony on the moon. This is an interesting little counterfactual exercise. But Reverbo, it's not just it's not just great big policy shifts or non-shifts. It's everyday lives. You know, we're having a conversation here where everybody remembers where they were of a certain generation.
Oh, sure.
And looking back and turning around and taking the long view down the corridor of history, recognizing how even their lives changed. What David in Tennessee said, you know, he went from being politically inspired to, give me a beer. You know, that's a big jump. And it's a bad jump.
Oh, it's the A word. It's the worst word. It's apathy.
Yeah.
It's what keeps the other side in power year after year. last week you were, I don't know if this may not change up our conversation, but last week you were talking about the why it was so hard for the left to, why we're having such a hard time communicating our message to everyone, and why it seems like the right has no problem. And I immediately realized how rhetorical the whole thing was, because the reason is because the right wing simply requires people to be ignorant. The success of their message requires ignorance. The success of our message, of course, requires some sort of intelligence.
Yeah, ignorance, the ultimate political no money down.
Yeah, and I mean, of course that's why. And you were talking about why it's so difficult to discuss things like the isms, you know, the communism, fascism, and this stuff with people, because they do the Barney Fife, they just hold their hands over their ears and they go la 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 la. They don't even have the capacity to understand this stuff anymore. And they are, you know, I don't know what they think is going to happen. Anyway, I have a, as you can imagine, a file of all sorts of political stuff, and I found this. I was rummaging through looking for that early warning signs of fascism thing, and I think it's worth reviewing that. It will only take like 30 seconds, but perhaps even today might be a good day to do it because of what we've been talking about.
Oddly enough, I've got it in the stack too.
Let me see here. We got, let's find it here a minute. Let's see. Half naked Kissinger thrown out of U.S. News and World Report mansion. No, that's not it. I'll find it here. Clinton holds summit with magic turtle. No, it's not it either. Let's see here. All right, let's see. Sinatra warns Ruskies to knock it off. Calls Soviet premier a world class knucklehead. All right.
You'll get to it.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, lick your thumb.
Here we go.
Gets through the pages quicker.
I got it. There's about a dozen of them. I go through these real quick, and I mean, this is, how many of these would have never come to pass? Powerful and continuing nationalism. Disdain for human rights. Identification of enemies as a unifying cause. Supremacy of the military. Rampant sexism. Controlled mass media. Obsession with national security. Religion and government intertwined. Corporate power protected. Labor power suppressed. Disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Obsession with crime and punishment. Rampant cronyism and corruption. And finally, fraudulent elections. There's a nice list.
You know, you hit one there that I've remarked upon in the past, Verbo. Number 12, obsession with crime and punishment. And the expansion on that says, under fascist regimes, the police are given almost limitless power to enforce laws. The people are often willing to overlook police abuses and even forego civil liberties in the name of patriotism. There is often a national police force with virtually unlimited power in fascist nations. Now, seriously, the TSA thing, does that fit here? And then there's a little something else. I just got a link in from Sandra. Headline, NYPD commences use of iris scans of suspects. They're not scanning the suspect for people named Iris. These are retina scans. This is out of Star Trek. Along with fingerprints and mugshots, the New York City Police Department is now taking photographs of the irises of crime suspects.
Oh, it's just like Blade Runner. That's what it's like.
Yeah. You discover a turtle in the hot sun. The turtle is on its back.
What's a turtle?
You've seen the movie, too.
You're not helping, Leon. Why aren't you helping?
He's a skin job. Obsession with crime and punishment, though. I wanted to share this with you. You know, you find trenchant observation in the strangest places. I read an interview with Robert Downey Jr. And most of it's just, you know, hey, what's it like to be Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah.
But I've remarked on the program from time to time that we have a punishment fetish in this country. Corrections Corporation of America, the privatized prison company, is a hot buy right now, Reverbo.
Yeah.
And so I've talked about the we get off on imposing harsh punishments on other human beings because in a way that lets us say, well, don't I feel good about me? Because gosh darn it, people like me. Right?
Right.
So I'm reading...
Not just right, that kind of right.
Oh, Bellworthy.
Well, Stuart Smalley, you just threw out a Stuart Smalley reference.
I did. So I'm just cruising along and reading, you know, it's a celebrity interview. But then I get down to this, because remember, Robert Downey has done time in the stir.
Yeah, he had a little, there was an incident, I remember.
And he says, I like interviews with someone having some catharsis. It always starts with, I kind of had a feeling I shouldn't be doing this, and he laughs. It's never, I strapped the hashish around my midsection just knowing it was all going to pan out for me. And they never say on Locked Up Abroad, this was the first time I ever tried this. They just describe the time they got busted. And then this reverbo. I swear I may paint it around the just up on the quarter round molding of the ceiling. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I'm part of a culture that is equally fascinated, disgusted, and soothed by the socialization of the random suffering of others.
Robert Downey Jr. said that?
Yeah, the same response I had. Wait, why? Who?
Decent. I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's restaurant quality thinking.
Yeah.
Now, I am part of a culture
that
is equally fascinated, disgusted, and soothed. What a perfect word, soothed. By the socialization of the random suffering of others. I grabbed the magazine, I ran into the studio, I rifled through my drawer trying to find the last highlighter that my children had not taken from me, and kind of had to lick at it a little bit and made my tongue look funny. But I just highlighted the hell out of that.
Are people soothed, you think, because they're, but for the grace of God, go they? Or are they soothed because that's one less, you know, hummingbird, the hard canopy they don't have to share?
I think it's a little of both and neither of the above. I think it has to do with creating this false this false prism of comparison, where you can say, well, see, that's because they're that way. But I
God doesn't love them that stick. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, didn't God take a big steamer on them? God loves me.
Yeah, it's just that twisted validation that our friends on the other side embrace all too well.
And of course, this all stems from the characteristic of fascism, number 12, obsession with crime and punishment.
Well, I think every one of these on this list is gnawing at the core of this country. Right now.
Well, so then, Reverbo, if you go through powerful and continuing nationalism, fascist regimes tend to make constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, symbols, songs, and other paraphernalia. I'll put a boot in your... Flags are seen everywhere, as are flag symbols on clothing and in public display. So we go, check!
Check.
Disdain for the recognition of human rights, check. And we make little lists of everything we can point to that points back. Identification of enemies and scapegoats as unifying cause. Liberals! Check.
Yeah, well...
What happens when we get through all 14 of those, Reverbo, and the evidence is so overwhelming as to be unmistakable? What happens then?
Well, what happens is nothing, because it goes back to the success of the message part. You and I went to school. I had civics class. I had government. I studied government. I had social studies. I had critical discussions and and essay tests, and there wasn't this passion about being stupid or force for being stupid. I mean, you need, I don't know.
No, but I mean, there really are. There are real differences. I mean, look back at the Kennedy White House, for God's sakes.
But just for a second, this list really kicks me in the gut. And if everyone's waiting for the liberals to learn how to kick everybody in the gut, God, what more do you want?
It's going to be a long wait. And that's what I mean. Most of the stuff that we identify as our slow slide into fascism comes after the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, right.
And it's, you know, there are so many symbols. I mean, for God's sakes, the Kennedys had Pablo Casals over to the White House, you know, to make a little music. The Bushes had Lee Greenwood.
There, hold on a sec. That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just sliding into fascism. That's a book that we haven't written yet. Sounds like a great book title. But there's people that clearly get this, only most people don't say, oh, you know what it is. Everybody, it's just too easy to just throw me a scapegoat. And the right wing has a whole bag full of scapegoats. Blames, you know, they always act like the other side has this victim complex, and that it's you know, the problem is that we don't take responsibility. God, I've never met a bigger group of idiots that doesn't take responsibility than them.
All the while they're telling you that they're personally responsible.
Right. And you know, America is just that rugged individualism, and, you know, everybody just did everything on their own. Folks, nobody did anything on their own. The government's been handing out things to corporations for centuries.
Yeah, of all the people who have not, of all the people, yeah, okay, who have not lifted themselves up by their bootstraps, corporate America leads that list.
Jesus Christ, the Bush family made their fortune on the government. They made their fortune on the military and on war.
Starting with World War I and maybe the Civil War.
Nothing about nothing ruggedly individualistic about that.
Not so much.
Well, you probably got a lot of calls tonight.
Well, I'm going to hit a few more, but have you hit publish on the latest Cavalcade of Crazy yet?
Tomorrow morning, I'm going to do that. I'm all set to go. So yes, look for a new piece tomorrow on the website.
Cool. A little Thanksgiving travel log.
Yeah, kind of. Just I thought I would give thanks this week to my country, and that's something we all should sit down and think about perhaps.
Yeah, and the right wing will be thanking God at the table. Thank you, baby Jesus, for bringing us the Republican majority in the House. Amen. Thank you for saving us from that creeping fascism, from that Kenyan Muslim. So maybe the rest of us could sort of karmically balance it out by being grateful for a government that actually used to give a damn about, at least a half a damn maybe, about the poor, about children.
Yeah, I mean, you hate spending time looking back, but today it's perfectly appropriate. But it gets kind of old to keep, you know, people, that's how you get this apathetic, that's how it all sets in. You just think, God, it could have been so good. That's what really, really, you know, depresses everyone.
Yeah, and you really just, it's hard to pull up one of those, you know, well, we'll always have Paris. Because we didn't.
No, we didn't. Anyway, it doesn't get much more personal for a lot of us than today, so.
Make it personal, Reverbo.
No, same to you, and I will enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, thank you. Bye now.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Cavalcade of Crazy correspondent from HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That is the one and only Reverbo. Also, a little announcement for you. We've got a new blogger at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thinking ain't illegal yet. Up there. So watch for those posts as well. You know, you can set up your feed and get it sent to you as soon. You know, whenever Reverbo writes, whenever thinking ain't illegal yet writes, bang, right to your mailbox. Isn't that cool? Let's see. I'm going to run this just as a sort of reminder. You know the resident prophet of the horn is none other than Bill Hicks. Peace be upon him. And Bill Hicks had a take on the assassination. And far more than a comedian. I think he was much more of a philosopher, or perhaps prophet. So let's remember the late great Bill Hicks as well. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to the Horn.
Kennedy. I love talking about the Kennedy assassination because to me it's a great example of a totalitarian government's ability to, manage information and thus keep us in the dark any way they do. Oh, sorry, wrong meeting. shit. That's the meeting we're having tomorrow at the dock. I love talking about Kennedy. I was just down in Dallas, Texas. You can go down there and to Dealey Plaza where Kennedy was assassinated. And you can actually go to the sixth floor of the school book depository. It's a museum called the Assassination Museum. I think named that after the assassination. I can't be too sure of the chronology here, but anyway, they have the window set up to look exactly like it did on that day. And it's really accurate, because Oswald's not in it. Yeah, so. Painstaking accuracy, It's true. It's called a sniper's nest. It's glassed in. It's got the boxes sitting there. You can't actually get to the window itself. And the reason they did that, of course, they didn't want thousands of American tourists getting there each year going, no fucking way! I can't even see the road! Shit, they're lying to us! Fuck! Where are they? There's no fucking way! Not unless Oswald was hanging by his toes upside down from the ledge. Either that or some pigeons grabbed onto him, flew him over the motorcade. Surely someone would have seen that. There was rumors of anti-Castro pigeons seen drinking in bars. Someone overheard them saying, coo, coo. Unbelievable. And what's wild is people's attitudes in the States about it. Talking about Kennedy, people come up to me, Bill, quit talking about Kennedy, man. Let it go. It's a long time ago. Just forget about it. I'm like, all right, then don't bring up Jesus to me. Back and to the left. 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 Which, by the way, that action you see Kennedy's head do in the Zapruder film? Caused by a bullet. Coming from up there. Yeah. I know it looks to the layman or someone who might dabble in physics. This accident here would have been caused by a bullet coming from, well, up here. Did you see that? Did everyone see that? Yeah, but no. What happened was Oswald's gun went off, causing an echo to echo through the buildings of Dealey Plaza. And the echo went by the limo on the left, up into the grassy knoll, hitting some leaves, causing dust to fly out, which 56 witnesses testified was a gunshot, because immediately Kennedy's head went over. But the reason his head went over is because the echo went by the motorcade on the left, and he went, what was that?
So there. We have figured it out. Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here, here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Oh, good. Honey, I heard on the news that they figured out that the gun, what happened is that there is an echo and that Kennedy was asking Jackie what it was, and that's why his head flew up. Honey, what time's Gladiators on? Are we missing it?
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
A lot of profundity in that little bit of so-called comedy, don't you think? 9 minutes past the hour on this Monday edition of The Horn. We will get back to our regularly scheduled Moran Monday. Next Monday, if that's okay. Email coming in from William. He says, I was in the second year of high school and in gym class when we were brought in from the cold Chicago wind and sat at the foot of our lockers when we heard the news on the cheap tinny speakers that JFK was shot dead. Looking back, as I have many times before, it always struck me odd that many of us would soon be facing Vietnam in some fashion. It also struck me odd that right after this day of horror, out of what seemed nowhere, came the British rock group Invasion. It almost seemed that this was a distraction by design to pull minds off the horror and shift a life as we knew it into something unpredictable. Not that I don't like the music of those times, I do, yet it does make me wonder if this was a change in every respect to distract the people, as TV and culture often does. Perhaps this is an odd way to look at it, yet it all was a time of very fast change in almost every respect. There was a sort of new ideology, yet much, much work to do. Very true. Very true. I'm going back to the phones in just a second here, but just by way of giving you an idea of just how repulsive and how miserably soulless right-wingers are, you know that Alan Simpson, an old creature who should have, he should be enjoying his retirement, but no, he's got to keep his claw in stirring the pot. So, of course, naturally,
that liberal President Obama
put him in charge in conjunction with a blue dog Democrat named Erskine Bowles of the Cat Food Commission, where they became fast chums. And in his column today, Paul Krugman has a quote from Alan Simpson. The column's titled, There Will Be Blood. Yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with that stunning film. But riffing on... nice to know we're not the only ones that riff on movies, huh? Krugman notes, here's what the... Remember, this is Alan Simpson, who described, was it Medicare or Social Security, as a cow with a million teats. Yeah, classy. So Krugman writes, so here's what the very serious Mr. Simpson said on Friday. I can't wait for the bloodbath in April when the debt limit time comes and they're going to look around and say, what in the hell do we do now? We've got guys who will not approve the debt limit extension unless we give them a piece of meat, real meat. Meaning spending cuts, Krugman notes. And then he goes back to the quote. And boy, the bloodbath will be extraordinary, Simpson continued. How does anybody who talks like that have any business, A, running a very serious inquiry, and B, being allowed out in civil society? Just asking. Bloodbath? And not just bloodbath, I can't wait for the bloodbath. He's eager for it. Damn, you can almost hear the sound of the file on his fangs. But the thing is, he's describing, you know, a little political theater that will go on in Washington. But there will be a real bloodbath. And here's the kicker. It's the blood of elderly people. It's the blood of sick children. It's the blood of people going hungry. Because, as Krugman notes, the fact is that one of our two great political parties has made it clear that it has no interest in making America governable unless it's doing the governing, and that party now controls one house of Congress, which means that the country will not, in fact, be governable without that party's cooperation, cooperation that won't be forthcoming. Alan Simpson is not the only miserable, soulless, godless right-winger who is yearning for a bloodbath. They all are. God, they're so close to being able to kill Social Security. They're so close to being able to kill Medicaid. They're so close to being able to kill Medicare. So close. Oh, that they can't wait to get there. Makes you kind of sick, don't it? Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Is this Andy?
Andy, Redwood City, man.
Hey, what's happening?
Man, it just amazes me that Mr. Obama, our president, on this, the week before this kind of terrible, horrendous day back in history, Mr. Obama gives the Medal of Freedom to George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, that's still gagging me.
What the heck was that all about? And where, on November 22nd, 1963, where was Mr. Bush?
Dallas, wasn't he?
Happened to be in Dallas. Exactly. Had him be in Dallas giving a speech the day before. He left in the morning. I think he went out to see the Dealey Plaza site first and made sure everything was set up okay for Mr. Frank Sturgis and I believe E. Howard Hunt and some of the other Cuban boys that they had brought down, probably some mafia guys, so they could have a hail of gunfire just fly over that grassy knoll. Then Mr. Bush took off to Tyler, Texas on his private Zapata jet, which of course was just a front organization for the CIA for years. Mr. Bush had known to do drilling in Guatemala right at the same time that Jacob Arbenz was taken out in a coup. Mr. Bush's Zapata just happened to be doing some drilling just outside of that. Just coincidence, though. And when Mr. Mossadegh went down in Iran, where was Mr. Bush then? Well, Zapata just happened to be doing some drilling outside in the Persian Gulf area right at the same time when Mossadegh went down. Career CIA agent? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It's an amazing thing. Connected with all the people involved with the Kennedy assassination in one way or the other. Oh, also Cuba, of course. The Bay of Pigs was one of his babies, too. Zapata just happened to be doing some drilling off the Cuban coast. Amazing coincidence at the same time the Bay of Pigs went down. Just an amazing coincidence.
Just a coincidence.
There's too many of these coincidences.
Move along, citizen. These are not the droids you're looking for. Yeah, and
too much.
Marty just dropped me an email, and he said, by the way, George H.W. Bush says he doesn't remember where he was on November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah, he just happened to send a cable to the FBI office in Houston indicating that he knew there was a plan to assassinate Kennedy, and he mentioned a guy named Bill Parrott, I think, who was the head of the local Republican Party, who happened to be in a feud with Mr. Bush over some party politics. But Mr. Bush seemed to have some inside information that some operatives were planning to do something nasty to the president that day.
You know, yeah, and not to take this too far afield.
In black and white.
Not to take this too far afield, Andy, but remember, and this is undisputed now. Nobody will talk about it.
In black and white. He did send a cable to the FBI office.
But what I was going to say is undisputed is that a generation previous, his daddy, Prescott, had been involved in the planning of a coup to remove FDR from office. This shit runs in their blood.
That was, General Bailey or
Butler.
Something like that?
Yeah, they went to Smedley Butler.
Smedley Butler. I even have the book right here. I've been wanting to read it for a long time. War is a Racket, Smedley D. Butler.
Who
gave Nixon his start as a congressman? Who funded him? The old man Prescott funded Nixon. And who happened to just work for Nixon in 1947 and had contact with it? A guy named Rubenstein, which was later changed his name to Jack Ruby. Happened to work for Richard Milhouse Nixon. There's just some amazing coincidences here.
Yeah, the magic bullet's only the tip of the iceberg.
And you, if you have an opportunity, there's a CD out called Dark Legacy. If you get a chance to see it, and it goes through all these connections with George H.W. Bush, and actually, you know, makes the case that this is the man behind the whole thing. Little Georgie, you know, the Ivy League boy who just worked his way up and is just a great old American.
Well, remember where the original OSS recruited all of its operatives from.
Right.
Yale.
The old Skull and Bones guys.
Yeah.
They're all there. And Dulles, you know, is good buddy. You know, it amazes me, too, that 3 weeks after Dulles had Diem in Vietnam, South Vietnam, killed, you know, they did him in the CIA and a general, Nguyen Van Thieu or whatever his name was, who was the last general. 3 weeks after that, Kennedy just happened to go down. Bang, bang. All ready to rock and roll in South Vietnam. The motive was there. Definitely the motive was there. To rock and roll in South Vietnam and let that defense industrial complex just go
wild.
Right, and make all kind of money.
And see, there's some bet hedging going on there, too, because very few people recall, Andy, that LBJ was one of the first patrons of a little teeny tiny outfit called Brown and Root. Long before they were ever Kellogg, Brown, and Root, He was funneling earmark money for them to, you know, build bridges and things like that in Texas. And by the time Vietnam gets into full swing, they become known as Kellogg Burn and Loot, and they were the ones who built and designed the notorious tiger cages.
Right. Yeah, they made a lot of money in Vietnam. Nice contract.
Yeah, it was a good dollar, that Vietnam dollar.
Right. You know, to get off the subject, but it is amazing that Obama is going to give him the Medal of Freedom. There's a career CIA agent. There's no telling how much blood is on that guy's hands.
Well, you know, speaking of blood on hands, I was in the chat room a little bit ago, and someone had posted a link to a photo taken somewhere in the White House of Henry Kissinger sitting next to Barack Obama. You know, if I was the Secret Service, I wouldn't let Henry Kissinger within a mile of Barack Obama. But, of course, you can't see Kissinger's hands because all that blood dripping off of them for all these decades has rendered them pretty much grisly.
It's hard to believe that Obama is taking advice from people that have so proven themselves to be illegitimate and just total incompetent, you know, nincompoops. If it's not the economic situation with Geithner and Bernanke and Larry Summers, it's the defense area where you got General Jones and Robert Gates, and it goes on and on.
And the question is there a break? Is there a let up? Is there any way to?
Or General Petraeus, the same thing. You know, this baloney with the surge. Black and Decker, man, wasn't Petraeus and his surge. It was Black and Decker. The use of drilling holes in people's bodies and mainly heads of the Sunnis that won that war by the Shia. Anyway, I sent you an email the other day when you were discussing the renowned cat food commission.
Yes.
Erskine Bowles. Jesus, a career Wall Streeter. Started in 1969 at Morgan Stanley. Now worked his way through the ranks with a number of investment banking firms and so forth, and on the board of Morgan Stanley right now, the people that just want to get, you know, they want it all. They want it all. That's the buzzword. That's the catchword. And I know you've said it many times, but they do.
We're actually working on a bumper sticker now.
Paul Krugman has said the same. There's no doubt this cat food commission is just a joke. They want a 23% top tax rate. Joke. Complete joke. Everything they couldn't get or they've always wanted to get, they put in that commission. And tax rates down to corporate tax rates down to 26%. When
that will ultimately wind up being effectively zero.
Right. Where the average now, according to Alan Blinder, is only 8% anyway by the S&P 500. I know a study they did of 275 companies in the S&P 500. The average effective tax rate was 18.5%. So, you know, we're there already. I don't know. It's just a ridiculous thing. It has nothing to do with the deficit except for making it worse.
Well, you know, but when people like Krugman write a column that includes this quote from Alan Simpson, this is the New York Times. Is this not sufficient to generate some shock, some outrage? I can't wait for the bloodbath in April. God almighty, Andy.
On that cat food commission, I think it was the head of the AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka, made a statement that 14.5 out of 18 of the members are right-wingers on that commission, are right of center right. What? And Obama picked all those people. What a son of a bee.
Well, Obama's people.
Because he picked all righties for the most part. And I think the 0.5 is that guy that used to be with the SEIU. who's supposed to be, you know, you would think would be on the left, but Andy Stern, but he's proven himself to be just a lackey for corporate America.
Oh, Andy Stern's the biggest sellout that labor's ever produced.
Just a total lackey. Another thing, too, I wanted to mention, you had a talk with, you call him affectionately, Boss Man Wayne, I guess, a couple of nights ago, and I just thought it was interesting because David Shirota did a piece which I thought was interesting too, and he was talking about Representative Nick Rahal, I guess, in your area, and also Joe Manchin, how much work him and the labor guys did to get those guys in.
Yeah,
but I just wonder, what have those guys done for labor?
Well, the fact of the matter is, where Joe Manchin is concerned, his history, you know, back early on, when he first got into the state house as a state senator or whatever, he was prevailing wage, anti-labor, right to work, you know, goon. He was the epitome of a Democrat in name only. But after labor whipped his ass a couple of times, he realized that he had better find the foot of the cross, and he did. And for all the other things that I don't like Joe Manchin for, I have to give credit where credit is due, Andy, and that is that he made a pledge that labor would always be at his table, and that he would always listen to labor, and that he would bust ass for labor. And over the 6 years that he was governor, he lived it, he walked it, he talked it. It was the absolute truth. Now, not if you were a public school teacher, mind you, but, you know, the building trades and stuff like that, he was very good to them. And so, you know, that's the end.
People Wayne represents, he got the job done. He came through for them.
Right.
Well, that's good, I guess. I just know overall, I don't think the guy's worthy of spending any time on. You want to spend your time on people that are really going to make a difference for you, I would hope.
Well, you do, but the thing is, those people are few and far between in this state.
Yeah, absolutely. They're few and far between everywhere.
You know, to get an Alan Grayson here, or a Kucinich, or a Wellstone, ain't going to happen.
Right.
You know, Jay Rockefeller is an establishment liberal. In other words, he's rich enough to be liberal when it suits him. But he's all very much wrapped up in the national security state. And, you know, he's never seen a mountain that he didn't want blown up unless it was near his cabin in Pocahontas County. You can imagine what a cabin for a Rockefeller is like.
Right.
And
out with something the other day, and now I can't remember what it was, but it really irritated the heck out of me. He made some... Oh, yeah, he did the... He came out with a thing, I guess he got up with the commission with the FCC and... made some statements on about News Corp, Fox News, and also did the equalization with the MSNBC and said some things like, if you guys don't get your act together, we're going to get you.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Rockefeller saying that, basically he was spreading Jon Stewart's false equivalence, that MSNBC and Fox are the same.
Exactly. I was wondering what planet he was on, man. Just wondering what planet he was on. You just turn on the radio, Mr. Rockefeller, and if you want to get blitzed with just pure fascism on almost every other station, and you will never, and in most parts of this country, the vast majority, 90% of this country, you won't hear a progressive word on that radio dial whatsoever. I don't know where he's coming from. I really don't.
Well, he's in D.C. He doesn't have to pay attention
right.
to what goes on here in West Virginia.
Right.
The only time he hears radio in West Virginia is when he's being interviewed by Hoppy Kercheval, who is a shameless right-winger.
Right.
Who is in the pay of John Racy, by the way.
You know, just another thing I want to mention, too, is they had an election in Oakland, California, nearby where I am. And they had a career Democrat who had raised a lot of money and had a lot of name recognition running against a local city councilwoman, and there were a couple people in the race, so it watered down the results quite a bit. But they used, for the first time in Oakland, they've been doing this in San Francisco, they used IRV voting.
Instant runoff, yeah.
Exactly. And this woman, this guy Don Parada, who had been the perennial, I think he was head of the Senate and the legislature for a long time, perennial Democrat who had great name recognition, a lot of corporate money, and had always been a corporatist, had won just with the first round of voting. But this woman, Jean Kwan, won with the residual votes that they counted, the second and third place. And she took the lead, and she won by 4%. And she's much more progressive, much more, you know, down to the earth, a person of the people, and much more environmentally. And mainly that's where she got her start. She's an environmentalist. So there is hope. If we could get IRV voting in a lot of other places in this country, that is hope to take out incumbents who have the name recognition and have the money. So just a thought.
Oh, I think it would work. Well, it works the world over. I mean, I remember one night when John Fox was talking. That's basically what he's got in Australia.
Oh, that's great. So that allows you to actually vote against somebody, too. Because if you don't want somebody, like with me, there's almost all the time I do not want the Republican in there. So you can put, you know, all votes on the other, and you can vote for a Green Party candidate who you don't think might win, but at least you can get that second vote to the Democrat.
Right. And that involves a lot less nose-holding, too.
Right, and it really gives you the...
In other words, it works, so the chances of it ever happening, Andy, are approaching nil.
Well, it is. It's happening in California, but...
Yeah, but I mean, I would love to... Shoot, it took, 10 years to get a pilot program for clean elections going here for, like, two races.
Right.
I mean, these people are not going to go for something like that, in large part because the people passing the law that would allow it to happen are people who know that their bacon would be in the fire if it did.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's like asking the fox to quit the hen house. Or the weasel.
Right. Well, that's why it's got to be driven from the ground up. It's got to be a grassroots effort. Now, one other comment I was thinking, too, I wanted to say is that you talked about getting, you actually read an email that I sent about George Soros and Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, too, you know, Warren Buffett with this whole thing with Goldman Sachs recently, with them getting into trouble with the mortgage-backed securities and lying about this guy, John Paulson, who actually set up the mortgage-backed securities, and then they sold this stuff anyway, although, as Carl Levin kept calling it, on and on, you know what it was, the S ending with the T, yeah, type of junk that they were selling to customers, even though they knew it was going to blow up and they knew it was bad. But Warren Buffett has been an avid backer of Goldman Sachs and Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO over there. That's another thing that Buffett has really irritated the hell over.
And yet he came out today, or in the last day or so, and said the tax rates on his class need to be appreciably higher.
Tax the rich. You know, that should be obvious. That should be so obvious. When they used to be 91% tax rates during the Eisenhower era, after the first 3 million, and when Kennedy was in office, yeah, he brought it down. He brought it down to 71%.
Right.
Big deal. 71% it was when Kennedy was in office, for God's sake.
Yeah, from what, 92% under Eisenhower?
Yeah. 91, I think, to be exact. But anyway, and then Reagan brings it down to 28 at one point.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention a couple of emails that rolled in on this topic. After the show was over, and we'd Friday, and we had the back and forth over George Soros, Sandra wrote back in, and she said, "I accept the corrections concerning my comments about Soros, and there's no doubt that Soros was a supporter of the democratization process that occurred in Eastern Europe. But it should be noted Soros was the primary financial backer of Jeffrey Sachs, the neoliberal economist at the time who implemented the economic shock therapy in Poland and the former Soviet Union. Soros has since had a change of heart about the value of economic shock therapy to emerging democracies, but this change came too late for Poland and Russia, where Soros profited directly from the new markets he helped to create." And she closes and says, "I think it's great Soros supports progressive causes, but no one gets that rich without stepping on folks."
Well, there's no question about that, and I can't deny that. I know Sandra is definitely correct. Poland did go through an economic shock therapy, and even today they don't really get it that corporations have to be reined in, they have to be regulated and controlled, and I noticed that there's really no freedom of speech in Poland to talk against corporations. You can get your ass put in jail, and you can get sued really bad.
Yeah, well, it's reminiscent. I remember reading something about that, and I thought it was kind of reminiscent of the way they use the draconian defamation laws in Singapore.
Yeah, and they're doing that in Poland. They really let the corporations run roughshod over the average person and consumers. And
you mentioned Reagan and the 28%, Andy. Ron in Raleigh said, remember the top tax rate that Ronnie Reagan and David Stockman put into effect was 28%? Ron says, does anyone recall the recession that followed? You know as well as I do that a 0% tax rate will bring in all kinds of revenue because you just can't cut taxes enough. And he's
that's a total joke, a total fallacy.
But they get away with it because they're treated like these right wing cut the taxes types are like the guy who's 9 beers into his 12 pack and wants to tell you about the night that the aliens gave him his anal probe. We don't take that guy seriously, but the stuff that these clowns are talking about with cutting taxes is on the same level as I got probed by the aliens, but because they dress in nice suits and we put them on TV, we act like they actually have something valid to offer to the discussion, when in fact they don't.
Now, the fact of the matter is, when you lower taxes, you incentivize people to speculate and to use money unwisely and to send it overseas or to try to make a fast buck. If you keep taxes high, they're going to reinvest it in the business. They're not going to take it as income. They're not going to take it in salary or in bonuses. They're going to roll it back into the business and grow the country. And that's what higher taxes will do. Higher taxes will grow the economy, will increase the GDP because you're rolling it back into the business.
Well, God Almighty, Andy, with just the modest tax increases that came through under Bill Clinton, didn't the rich get vastly more rich? I mean, it actually served to benefit them.
Well, there's no doubt. Even during the Clinton era, from like 1992 to 2000, the top 1% gained 10% every year more in wealth, and the bottom 99% only gained like 2%. It was better than the 1% under Bush gains that they had, but the bottom 90% only gained 2% compared to 10%, for the top 1%. So even during the Clinton era, it helped a little, even that, higher taxes at the 39% bracket, top bracket, helped the lower classes, the bottom 99%. But still wasn't a fun time. It's still the rich went crazy when Clinton was in there too.
Yeah, remember the Arkansas Project, Richard Mellon Scaife.
Right, do Mr. Clinton in, go after Whitewater, right?
Yeah. Stunning.
That's the fascist way. The fascist way is always attack the character, attack the person, and make them irrelevant as a voice. The same thing with Elliot Spitzer. Here's a guy that was doing Wall Street in. He was making life miserable for those bastards, and they had to kill his character. Kill him. Knock it out.
Take him out. Exactly. Right. Andy, good hearing from you, brother.
Please do. All right, take care of yourself. Have a nice Thanksgiving, and all the people in the Horn have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, and you too, Andy.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. Andy calling from California, and Ron writing back. He says, did you say probe? I take anal probing very seriously, and so should we all, considering we're about to receive a monumental anal probing. Ain't that the truth? They call it the Cat Food Commission, but maybe, I don't know, maybe we should be playing the Close Encounters theme as well. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Gareth out here in Bucks County.
Hey, Gareth. How are you?
Good. I was just thinking, I didn't realize that today was the Kennedy anniversary until I got home. And I was thinking about it because these creepy, extreme I think you call them right-wingers. I don't know what the name is anymore, but they've been around for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad has the most disturbing memory of the Kennedy assassination. I wasn't born yet, but he was in Philadelphia working at the Franklin Institute.
Mm-hmm.
His first job as a material scientist. And I never forgot this, and I always think about it every time the anniversary comes up. He said, you know, it was lunchtime, I think, out east when everyone heard. They're all at the lunch at the cafeteria. And they heard the news. You know, my dad just put his hands in his face, you know, or his face in his hands. About 10 of these right-wing weirdos he worked with got up and clapped when they heard. That's my father's memory of the Kennedy assassination. Now, when I heard that, I said, these must be the same people who are now, their sons and daughters, you know, who are members of this extreme wing of the Tea Party. You know what I'm saying? But these people have been around
right.
for a while.
Right, and I think, yeah, I think you're
they
pointing
clap,
to something.
They clap.
Yeah, you're
they
pointing
clap.
To something very valuable here, Gareth, and that is they pass this stuff along generationally.
That's it.
You know, when the Republicans got outvoted and Social Security was created, they huddled up and they said, someday we'll kill it. And they told their sons.
Yep.
And their sons
yep.
told their sons, and their sons told their sons. And it has burned like a little core nugget of white-hot inspiration inside the beating breast of the hard right wing that someday they'll kill all these social programs and they'll have that money where it belongs, in their pockets.
And you're not even shocked that to hear that a bunch of people clapped when Kennedy was killed, are you?
No.
Okay. I was when he told me that.
Well, I mean, it's shocking to the conscience insofar as it's sickening, Gareth. But, you know, again, I'm a guy from the Deep South. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised there. I remember my neighbor's daddy whooping it up the day that they announced that Dr. King had been murdered.
They hang on to things. They hang on for a long time to their prejudices and their hate.
Well, it's not so much that they hang on to it. It's all they have, Gareth.
I mean, it's like Shelby Foote. You know who Shelby Foote?
Yeah.
From the Civil War series?
Yeah.
It's a great, one of my favorite quotes from there was he was down south visiting Nathan Bedford Forrest's great-granddaughter or something, and she gave him the opportunity to wield his saber over his head, you know, which is a big thrill for him.
Sure.
And he goes, he says to the great-granddaughter, you know, I think there are two authentic geniuses during the war, you know, your great-granddad, Nathan Bedford, and Abraham Lincoln. And she puts her head down, oh, don't include that Abraham in there, you know. This is 1960s.
Yeah. No, look, when I was starting out in elementary school, we're talking about 1969, 1970, mm-hmm. there were still teachers in my elementary school who referred to the War of Northern Aggression.
Yeah, still. It was all about the control of northern banks on the South. I hear that one, too.
Didn't have nothing to do with slavery. It was all about economics.
Vicksburg, Mississippi did not celebrate July 4th until 1938.
Yeah.
You know, so this just doesn't seem to completely disappear. And when I heard that Kennedy story, I thought to myself, that's 47 years ago. That's not too long ago. And the resurrection is happening now with these guys. But Kennedy knew how to deflate those people pretty well. I think Obama could learn a thing or two from Kennedy.
But I don't know if he wants to deflate them.
I know, but here's the thing. Like, I'll never forget that great press conference where one of the reporters stood up and said, Mr. President, the Republican National Committee has recently adopted a resolution to have you basically qualified as pretty much a failure. And Kennedy just calmly turns to him and says, I'm sure it passed unanimously. You know, and everyone laughed. You know, he just knew how to disarm these people.
And part of that was because he knew who he was dealing with.
Right, right. And he knew that, I don't know what would have happened with him in Congress if he had lived, but, because the Goldwater people were on the march. Don't you get that feeling that they were going to, the early Reaganites were coming up then?
Well, no, because the right-wing transformation only takes place after Goldwater gets stomped in 64.
Stomped badly.
And that is when they hunkered down and said never again, and they got serious about building their infrastructure. It began with direct mail and was followed up shortly thereafter. 1972 is when the Powell memo comes along, and right-wing moneyed interests are told, listen, you suckers, dig deep, dig hard, give till it hurts. We're going to set up an infrastructure that will completely control the messaging in this country. And the next thing you know, just like mushrooms after a spring rain, here comes the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and on and on and on and on.
The family. Don't forget the family, as they're called.
Well, sure.
They're the creepiest. But the Goldwater, I always thought the Goldwater thing,
You know, Kennedy would have stomped Goldwater, too.
You think so? Even with, you know what? Would Kennedy have put out that Daisy ad?
No, that thing. No, but that thing only aired once.
Yeah, but I think it was damn effective, based on what I've heard.
Well, the outcry of, this isn't fair. That's what the right wing always does when you catch them with their pants down.
Right.
It's not fair. And then they run more sleaze against us. But when we say it's not fair, they say, eat it and smile.
Right. I mean, I don't think I'm the first independent who's called you disappointed with their Obama vote, am I?
No, and you're certainly not, and God knows there's jillions of Democrats who are disappointed with their Obama vote, too.
Yeah, I can sense God, this is a strange sense in the last month listening to your show. I haven't heard too many independents, but there's a strange sense of Democrats coming out of the closet on this,
Well, I mean,
it's kind of uncomfortable to listen to. All of a sudden, they're saying, oh, gosh, where's our president? I keep hearing that over and over now.
This is not the guy that we thought we were electing.
No. The talk of hope and change, the hope and change speeches seem like a long, long time ago.
And a completely different guy, too.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really heard what you. I've been away for a little while. I haven't heard. What's your stance right now on Obama?
I'm pretty much disappointed.
Okay.
I would like for, as Bart Kopp says, I would like for him to come to work. but let me ask you. I mean, you're disappointed with your independent Obama vote, but by the same token, do you really, Gareth? Do you think it would? Do you wish you had voted for McCain and Palin?
No, the Palin thing, look, I think the only time I would have voted Republican would have been the first time Reagan was in, but I was 14 at the time. That's probably the only time I think I may have voted Republican, but not since then. A couple times locally because of guys who were looking after the farms around here, but that's about it.
And see, I know what's going to happen in 2012. I'm going to vote for Obama again.
Based on what the alternatives are.
Right, based on the political hold-your-nose theory. And that's a crappy way to do politics.
But again, it's a serious. I wish the Kennedy thing was the bits of humor about just about everything. Like I never, that would help Obama if he could. He's not as good off the cuff as I thought he might be.
No, he might be good off the cuff, but the thing is, he is so measured and so constrained and so roped in by his handlers. Because everything they do, Gareth, they do because they're wondering first, well, if he says this, what will the right wing say? If he says that, how many times will it be twisted on by Glenn Beck? I mean, think about the Shirley Sherrod affair. They preemptively canned a woman based upon a lie because they were afraid of what Glenn Beck would say.
I can't believe people care what that guy has to say with his puppets, He's gone completely off the deep end, and people are even more...
But you're rational. You're intelligent, Gareth.
Yeah, I have a math degree, so I have to be logical.
Right, but see, his viewers don't. Hey, look at there, he's using the puppets. I like puppets.
He has a Soros puppet, right? Is that what he has?
Yeah, but John Stewart did a beautiful job eviscerating that.
He did the whole thing with the glasses.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah, but the thing with back to the Kennedy thing, I just want to mention, he even dealt with the deficit in at one of those Thai dinners, they had those, maybe newspapers or something. He was saying, okay, we have to pay off what our predecessors left behind. We can't do it in 100 days, maybe not in 1,000 days. maybe not even in the lifetime of this administration, not even, you know, in our lifetime on this planet, but it's time to get started. You know? And everyone laughed. He just dealt with it, again, in a humorous way. And I haven't really, maybe it's, maybe when we entered the $1 trillion range, it wasn't as humorous anymore. Because back then, what was it, in the billions maybe? The debt?
Yeah.
That was just early Vietnam debt. And I've heard the last time we were balanced was Andrew Jackson. Is that true? Like Andrew Jackson?
I'm not entirely certain.
1830 something. And we even.
But see, one of the things that the right wing promulgates very effectively that is a total flippant lie is that a governmental budget is the same as a household budget. They're not. They're not.
Right.
You can't run a government absent debt. You can't, you know, pay as you go and all of that stuff. It's a nice thing to say, but ultimately you're still running on debt. And the world's been running on debt since, you know, Jesus, the 16th century, the 14th century maybe.
Mm-hmm. And they say,
but it's what you do with the debt.
And they keep passing on this mythology that the Republicans will put in an ex-businessman to take care of the whole problem. Well, the whole point is, a businessman's job is to look after profits and shareholders, and the president is supposed to look after the people in two different...
Well, there you go. I mean, let's remember when he was running for office in 2000, dim leader said, I think we need to run the government like a business, like Enron. And you know what? He did. He did. Hey, Gareth, I got to run along, but it's been a great conversation.
Yeah, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care. Happy Thanksgiving. Gareth calling from PA. And onward. And no. And no. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, I called because Andy mentioned Don Parada. I just wanted to say that fool was carjacked a few years ago.
Really?
Yeah, he was carjacked. I mean, he's really slimy, kind of. What happens in California, your term limit out, and so these career politicians just roll from one office to the next. So he had termed out. That's why he was running for that council position.
Right.
They never go away. That's the thing. I was like, oh, no. And the fact that he lost, I don't know, I thought that was kind of funny. But I remember him because he was, like, carjacked, and it was really good. You know, I mean, someone put a gun to his head and said, get out, and took his car. Anyway...
He survived, just lost the car, right?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't be making fun if he was dead, if he got hurt. No, he was fine. I just was more sort of, he's just one of those sort of career politicians. I mean, I think it's quite amusing that he didn't get that seat. Anyway, I forgot what I was going to ask. Good Lord. Oh, right, the iris scanner. What do you think of, isn't that outrageous?
Well, I think Reverbo nailed it. It's another step toward Blade Runner.
Well, it's just, I mean, the thing is, once again, all this stuff that's happening to people who just happen to get arrested, you notice that. I mean, being arrested these days could mean any damn thing. So basically, any exposure to the pigs, you have to turn over every, you know, they're cataloging.
Yeah, let's swab your cheek, take your picture, yeah. Roll your fingers, and here, look into the iris scanner.
And it's just so bizarre, and the sort of the whole pat-down stuff, which people are, you know, getting outraged about, which is interesting, I guess because it's focusing on a more affluent segment of society. I mean, I don't know, I'm a bit sort of bemused by it all. Now they're upset, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. And you know, if they, you know, they've got, what, 11 of them or 20 of them or whatever number they're going to have, because they're $24,000 a piece. Well, you know what? Using technology, you know, somebody's got to be an early adopter, because it's those early adopters who eventually drive the price down. And soon there'll be handheld units, I'm sure, that every patrolman will have on his hip.
Well, yeah, this is what they've been using in Afghanistan. So it's always interesting. You trace this, and they've always been practicing this shit in their war zones. And then they moving on over to us, you know, starting out with the poor, criminals, and then, you know, it just moves on up. That's what that pat-down is all about, because, you know, the poor ain't to fly in public.
But now if I, you know, hello, welcome to our world at the airport with some mindless shit that seems to be getting people ready just to get ready to be abused by the state, you know?
But all of a sudden they don't like it.
Well, they don't like it, and all of a sudden you got Republicans having congressional hearings. It's sort of interesting what turns out to be the tipping point. But after looking at how they do those pat downs, I certainly won't be flying anytime soon. That all that is just, and the X-ray is what kills me. The radiation and the
right, just like the iris scanner. At the bottom of that story said, the iris scanner is harmless, citizen.
Exactly. Yeah, and we're supposed to believe that because all I think of is that bitch who said the dust was okay. Keep thinking about that bitch.
Yeah.
Christine Todd Whitman.
Yeah, the breathe it. It's fine.
Right. So we know how that worked out. So, I mean, the credibility is already shot. But I don't know. I just, you know, it's giving me the creeps. The sort of, I guess they're halfway done with ringing the of New York City, too, with the cameras. You know that.
Yeah.
At the halfway point.
And, you know, these all go back to Reverbo going over those 14 defining characteristics of fascism. You know, all these things plug right in.
Oh, no, it's in grand. But the thing is, though, when you tie it into, you know, my whole theory that they're developing just a new normal, that this high unemployment rate is here to stay, you're going to have to manage. You have to manage that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they're going to have to manage it by, I don't know what, rounding people up or keeping people. I don't know. Did you look at that article I sent you with the whole bread line business in D.C.?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's off the hook, too. I was just like, good night.
But all of these things, I don't think it's about a roundup, Sandra. I think it's about a way of, it's kind of like the passive denial weapons themselves. It's a way of making sure that the proles stay in their place.
Okay, well, yeah. Okay, yeah, no. Yeah, fair enough. Okay, I don't mean roundup. I just mean ways of managing people who are being kicked out of the economy. Because this is what is happening, right?
Right.
You're being barred from economic activity, but you, like I said, if you have millions of people in that situation, you got to have some way of responding to that, you know? And, yeah, I don't know. I'm so
and once to again, the whole thing is being proven to be a total messaging screw-up by the White House. Well, they're not pleasant, but they're necessary.
I'm not surprised by
you know, because I look around on sites and, you know, you've got people saying, well, would you feel that way about it, Mr. Obama, if it was Sasha and Malia getting felt up? And the answer is Sasha and Malia don't have to go through that. And the same thing applies to John Boehner. You know, the news came out over the weekend. John Boehner will not be required to go through any form of security screening.
Yeah, but Ted Kennedy was on the terror watch list, so that's interesting.
Right.
I mean, yeah, no, listen, this is just tearing up, three tearing, you know, of a society, straight up haves and have not, and I know you got to go, but keep in mind, apparently Bloomberg is making noises about running for the presidency, and that is a nightmare, because you really will have the rich, the government run by the rich for the rich, literally. So look out for him, because he's making noises about his dislike of Obama. So Obama is catering to the ambassadors, and they throw him away. He's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredible. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, take care, Sandra.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.